Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the Android UI Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
I'm Jim Miller from the Framework team.
Whoa, someone that's not from the Toolkit team. So we reached way out, like two offices away, to talk to somebody from the broader Framework team. I think of the team that you're on as like the non-visual part of Framework as opposed to the UI Toolkit, which is like all the visual elements. So we're all part of the same larger group.
You're all part of the same Git repository, Frameworks.
Yes,
in fact. And so Toolkit is what sub-packages of Framework? Because I assume then you're everything else, right?
We're what we call System UI, which basically the bells and whistles around making your device work.
And then my whole description of it completely breaks down because System UI is all visual.
Yeah.
In fact, all the stuff, most of the stuff that you've worked on is very visual.
Yeah. And Chet actually wrote a lot of the stuff that we actually use, all the animation frameworks and stuff.
Yay.
Does it work? Somebody actually uses your code, Chet.
that's like two users I've heard of so far.
So we'll find more.
So Jim is here specifically to talk today about fingerprint stuff.
Yay!
So we launched M recently and talked about this. Actually, we talked about it at I.O., sort of the initial version. And it was in that funny dancing phase of the release where we're like, we have new APIs and new technologies that you can use and like zero devices that you have.
We had one device, but we couldn't talk about it.
Internally, we do actually work on these things and make sure that they're going to work on real hardware. But in the meantime, we sort of described the hoops you would need to jump through in the emulator to actually test this thing.
Right, yeah.
So where are we at now with it then?
So Fingerprint is actually a released API in M that lets you do all kinds of fingerprint related, even cryptography and authentication.
There's a product name for it too, right? API. It's the whole.
It's called Nexus Imprint is the overall marketing name for it. But it's basically anything to do with like fingerprint detection on Android.
Yeah, I've been using one of the new Nexus phones in the last couple months, and it's really great, especially combined with payment, just that fingerprint sensor and paying. It's so much. I mean, because I used to use wallet, but not having to enter my PIN and just touch the phone and put it up to the terminal and it just says paid, and then my watch basically says here's the amount you just paid. It's great.
Such a digital guy.
Yeah,
I have not tried the payment stuff because I wasn't really in the wallet world before. I should try that. That would be more convenient. Fingerprint is my favorite feature on the new hardware, though.
Yeah, thank you.
Like the fact that I can reach in my pocket and by the time I'm looking at the screen, it's unlocked and
locked. Yeah, it is kind of a magical experience. Working on the stuff, it didn't work for a long time. But when we finally got the bits together where you could tap the sensor and it would come up and you forgot your pattern. It just happened so naturally.
Actually, you describe one of the elements that's there's this coin, the two sides of the coin in being on Android and working on the early stuff where we spend most of the releases and most of the development of this, new hardware and new platform stuff kind of hating life because nothing quite works.
So that
by the time you actually get to the end of the release where magical things like fingerprint work, it's this amazing experience. You're like, oh, it works.
They didn't reboot my phone this time.
We get bugs all the time, so we always see the worst of the worst.
Yep.
And then when it finally works, it's a very satisfying experience.
And then we have, a very short period before we then start working on the new release.
You don't even get to enjoy
the dungeon.
It.
So every now and then, my phone will ask for my backup PIN anyway. What's that all about?
So there are a couple reasons for that. One is that, if we dive into like the security aspects, it depends on who you ask, but fingerprint isn't this end-all, be-all thing. It's not like Fort Knox. I mean, your fingerprint actually is – you do leave it on things you touch.
Right.
If you've seen a movie, you've seen the extraordinary efforts people will go through to get through that final door using fingerprint.
Right.
So if you're a supervillain, you probably shouldn't use fingerprint.
I see. So the idea is you can get the fingerprint and you can, do a cast.
There are tons of YouTube videos and stuff like that, so you can just look and see what people are trying. And in general, I mean, obviously the fingerprint vendors are thinking along these terms. They want to prevent that kind of thing. So those kinds of things often don't work these days. But
so if I carry around my wife's finger with me in case I took her phone by mistake.
Right. Yeah. Well, you might have to a difficult conversation trying to get that finger, but sure, that would probably work.
At least for some limited amount of time.
Yes.
Very
messy
solution.
Yeah, we won't
solution.
Go there, but yeah.
Okay. All right.
So it's the idea then that every now and then you check to see, hey, do you really know this PIN? Because
if not,
it's maybe a stolen phone with a...
Right. Yeah. So so we mostly trust fingerprint, but it really is kind of a shortcut for your traditional security code.
And it's opt-in as well. Like, we haven't gotten rid of the other security measures. We say, do you want this security measure?
In fact, you won't see fingerprint on that screen where you choose your PIN, pattern, and password just because it is treated differently on the platform.
Okay. Out of curiosity, how many fingers did you train your phone to recognize?
Over the whole time, probably thousands. Okay, it's the same couple fingers, but... So our vendor basically does all of the background testing on that kind of stuff. So they, I don't know the details of how they test it, but they have some fingerprint pool that they test their software every time they give us a new release. As far as we're concerned, I register all of my fingers just to make sure that the worst case works.
I see.
And then, you know, on my personal device, when I dog food, I have maybe four fingers set up. Okay. It's because, you know, the different ways I hold the phone, sometimes I'll grab it with my left hand or sometimes the right hand.
Right.
And it's designed to handle those kinds of scenarios.
I keep expecting to have to train it on more, but I've had it on one the entire time and it does
everything I need. I'm interested to see the use cases because they're, you know, at least for me, I tend to, you know, use the phone in either hand.
Yeah, every now and then I have to grab it with the other hand and then it's really convenient just to put your finger on the back of the phone and
No, I've just got the one index finger and then one of my toes.
You shouldn't have told anybody that. That's
a complicated use case. I can't go into it.
So can you say more about the security aspect? So it's basically a shortcut to your normal...
Right. You want technical details?
Yeah. Our listeners are super technical.
Show, I guess. So let's just dive into that. So...
But can someone hack in and get your fingerprint? Or is it segmented?
We hope not.
Okay.
So the overall design, I mean, so when I first approached this thing, someone came to my desk, I said, hey, Jim, you're going to implement fingerprint. I'm like, what? Because I mean, the hardest part is how do you turn something as effectively a Boolean value, to say yes or no, into something that you can trust, right?
Yep.
It's kind of like asking Honest John to hold the keys for you, right? You say, hey, when I give you this password, I want you to give me the keys back. So we have this thing on the platform called attestation, which is, I guess, a very common security term. And so we have this model where we have a trust environment that runs as a privileged process on the platform, or it can be implemented depending on how the vendors choose. But effectively, it's really hard to tamper with.
Okay.
So we can enroll keys in that space, and we can use fingerprint to unlock them. There are APIs on the Git that show you how to use these.
Okay.
So if you look up fingerprint dialogue, you can find those.
Oh, that's one of the samples that's posted.
Right. Okay.
So you've built a bunch of UI pieces that apps and system UI itself can use then?
So there's one UI piece, which is kind of a shared library, if you will, and that's the confirm credentials screen. And that can be used to confirm either your PIN, pattern, password, or you can also use a fingerprint as a shortcut. In some cases, there are cases where you're wiping your device and we kind of want to know that you're really you. And you're not just accidentally putting your finger on the sensor. So
if apps are using fingerprint for authentication, then we will pop up. There's a way to tell us to pop up the, I guess, lock screen UI to show the fingerprint.
Well, are there direct fingerprint APIs, or are they simply saying, I want to authenticate now, and then they have the option of using whatever they've set up?
Yeah, there are two pieces. There is a common UI, which lets you actually authenticate based on your key guard. So that basically is a timeout-based cryptography setup. So you say, tell me, give me my keys back, but only give it to me if I've unlocked within the last 10 minutes. That's also tied to fingerprint. So if you use fingerprint or use your pattern to unlock your phone, then you...
Or face unlock. Let's not forget face unlock.
Oh, that's an issue. I'm glad you brought that up because that uses a different path.
Oh.
There are things that we trust on the platform, and we like to trust that, but... Mm-hmm. We hand that off to something called trust agents, which is kind of interesting. So trust agents are these things that vendors can supply. Google has our own trust agents called Smart Lock, and that lets you set up different conditions to unlock your device. But we don't consider that, you know, a super strong auth because we don't know why your phone is unlocked. So if you want to use cryptography with these APIs, then we only trust your primary PIN pattern or password or your fingerprint.
I see. So I could still be nearby with my watch. So the phone is unlocked, but I might not have the phone in my possession. Someone else could be using it to make purchases.
There are good reasons for that. I mean, think about a bank app, right? So banks often want, like, we want to know that you're you, right?
Yep.
So they have a stricter requirement on what they allow. So we would say, or they would say when they write their app that, well, you must authenticate using your PIN pattern or password within the last 10 minutes. Right? So it's a different use case, and that's why we don't wire Smart Lock into that.
Okay. Interesting.
So from the API standpoint, I'm still unclear. Like, what exactly? So there's a couple of different ways that people are going to use Fingerprint. One is just to get into to unlock their device.
Right.
And then the other is an app that wants to authenticate for payment or for, you know, making sure you're you when you use their whatever it is, credit card transaction. So what APIs are they going to interact with for the full process of, you know, validating that you're you through Fingerprint?
Right. So the one way I just described was basically if you're comfortable with having authenticated within a certain amount of time, that's the API, the Confirm Credentials API.
Yeah.
We have a separate example for that I can link on the site. There's also a Fingerprint API, and the Fingerprint API has no UI. We expect most vendors to want to heavily customize that. So, for example, if you're in your app and it wants to show your vendor logo and enter a password or use your fingerprint, they provide that whole UI. So the only thing they interact with on the system, it would be the Fingerprint Manager API.
Okay.
When you say vendor, what do you mean? Were you thinking developer?
An app developer.
Okay,
an
I
app
see.
Store.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
yeah.
So,
yeah.
okay. Yeah. So I was wondering if you're thinking like someone who was actually an Android handset manufacturer who wanted to change the system UI because they have their own look that they want to go for.
Okay, yeah, that's a good distinction to make. It's not the OEM, the vendor. Actually,
I see.
Right?
So if you're a bank app, but you really want to have a very heavily, you know, customized app where the user sees the fingerprint UI and they can basically say, I am who I am right there. Right. That's when you would use this?
Yes, or as an alternative like for your password, for example. So they could show you a dialogue that says, enter your password, or they show our fingerprint icon, and that means you can use your fingerprint here.
Okay.
That's the expected use.
But they have to do all that UI? There's no standard UI that pops up?
We prefer they use our sample. We provide a very, very robust sample, and that's the best way to start. If you're writing an app that uses fingerprint, start with that sample and then customize it.
So there's not a standard like widget or screen that you can pop up, but we show you the code. We give you the code to start from. Okay.
It seems like it would be a very useful support library thing, right? Because the problem we have with samples and the tools is that, you know, we try to keep the number of, you know, our project templates and our activity templates, we try to make them small. We don't always succeed, but we try to because what happened is we've discovered in the past that the user clicks some buttons and suddenly have lots of code in their project that they now own. And even though we discover bugs in that code later or, you know, the recommendations change, they still have all that code. Whereas if they just had a dependency on the fingerprint support library, let's say it existed,
right.
You know, with a few customizations, it'd be much easier for us to keep it up to date.
Yeah, and we're looking into that. It's just when we looked at this to begin with, we walked around and just asked people what they wanted, and they kind of drew some sketches, and we're like, none of these line up. So
No, that's of course. It's
providing that consolidated UI at the first release is kind of tough.
UIs like fingerprints are all unique.
Yes, they are. That's a good way to put it.
So speaking of support library, this requires M, right?
Yes, the feature is an M. So the underlying support could technically be implemented in L, but the public API wasn't until M.
Okay. All right.
So more about how you made it work. I'm a little unclear on what's actually being provided by the hardware manufacturers or, you know, the sensors on the device that enable this or libraries that come with that versus what you actually had to do to make it work on
the system. Yeah, we can talk to that. So most sensors these days, there are different varieties of sensors. There's something called match on chip. And what that means is that the chip itself captures the image and has some processor on it that can try and match that to a known set of fingerprint templates. Those chips are somewhat rare. There are many vendors working on making those work, but the majority of them actually use software recognition. So they effectively look like a camera that sees your fingerprint, and then they have a vendor-supplied library that does the actual matching. So, and they're like three major vendors of those types of toolkits. And then that is what we interface to, that library. There's something called the fingerprint HAL, which is actually mostly defined in fingerprint.h, but is just a handful of methods that lets us interface to hardware.
Okay.
Right? I don't know if you remember HAL is hardware abstraction layer.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, it's sort of – it's the API for the hardware vendors.
Right, right.
It's sort of below the framework. Right,
right. Right. So then there are several layers on top of that. There's a fingerprint D, which loads the vendor supplied library, which is their HAL interface. And then fingerprint D connects to fingerprint service. And then fingerprint service is the one that does the kind of the fan out to allow multiple clients to use fingerprint.
All right. So that's what we get from them. And then what did you need to do to actually make it work on the system?
So the piece that we got from them was the shared library, which is the HAL basically the HAL interface.
Yep.
So what we did is the methods that they supply are like enroll, authenticate, and remove, right? And then so fingerprint D loads their library, and that's the piece that we supply in AOSP is fingerprint D. And then fingerprint service talks to fingerprint D. And that's basically, like I said, it's the fan out for supplying multiple apps with this functionality.
Okay. So then I assume that the piece that you spent your entire life doing for the last several months was actually working on the UI to present the information to the user and have them do something, and then you would send that information down through the HAL to authenticate?
Actually, there are a lot of moving parts. I mean, part of it was we had to actually define the HAL library, HAL interface, right? So, and that was part of that was working with vendors to say, hey, you know, your sensor, your data sheet for your sensor does this. How do we get that kind of information from you? There are a lot of devils in the details. Like, we also had to add crypto to this. And so, for example, we interface with the standard Java objects, Cypher, Mac, and this one other one, Signature Mac and Cypher.
And why are you doing the crypto? Is that to make sure that people can't read it back? Is it like a one-way?
It's
way to basically write the fingerprint so that people can't like read it back and have a copy of your fingerprint forever?
So I should address that. So on the platform, we've decided that we don't actually deal in images. So images will never leave this trusted execution environment, for example. Yeah. So the only thing that comes out of that is attestation that says the user has pressed this finger on the device. And the framework will take that and will send that out to whatever listener is looking for an authentication at the time.
So it's a black box. We send the information in.
Right. Well, we request information, which is basically attestation saying we want the user to use a fingerprint now. And at some point in the future, we get a callback that says, okay, the user has touched the fingerprint sensor.
And the crypto is there to make sure that they can't leave. It's basically ensuring that since it's happening in software, not on chip.
The crypto layer is there to make sure that the app can verify that it is actually the fingerprint sensor that is being touched and not – well, so, yeah, you can imagine if you were a hacker, you would go in and you'd say, sure, yeah, you tap that finger. Sure, no problem. We're good, right?
See.
So, but you want more than that. You want to say, look, when the user taps a finger on the sensor, we want to be able to get a signed certificate that says it was this user and we are the system because you can trust us because the certificate is signed the way that you asked us to.
I see.
So it's a much stronger way to do this type of operation.
And how does root access affect any of this?
That's a good question. So the way it's designed, we want to make sure that root doesn't affect your secure keys. Like if you have a banking app installed, we want to make sure they can't access your banking app. So the banking app could have a private key that it registers with the cloud. When you tap your fingerprint, they can exercise a challenge and then send that to the cloud for verification based on tapping that fingerprint. And so we don't actually store the keys on the system in that case.
Okay.
So they would need the full data path in order to make that work.
Right.
Interesting. But you were talking about match on chip before?
So match on chip. So let's back up a little bit. So this trusted execution environment, basically there's no way for a hacker to go in and look at the actual data in that environment. So if you assume that, which we hopefully can trust, then the actual data you get back from the sensor is already trustworthy. They sign it. They say, this is signed with the same key you told me to sign way back when that you trusted. And so you know at that point that it hasn't been tampered with.
Okay. But then you were talking about cloud access for like fingerprints in your bank's database in the cloud. So That's clearly not on chip, right? So there's something else going
on. Okay, so match on. So let's just back up a little bit. So the actual fingerprint matching is done in a library, right? And so that library says, you know, given an image from what looks like a camera and a template, it says these two match and gives you back a unique key, say 10. And 10 means that you can tell that it was, you know, this fingerprint on this sensor.
Yeah.
And then that's all in the secure environment. So the secure environment can say, well, fingerprint 10 actually unlocks this particular key. So and so it just makes note of that, stores it away. It's like Honest John holding on to this new, you know, token. Then the system can come back and say, okay, I need you to wrap that token, wrap this new value with that token so I can send it to the cloud. And that token is basically private to the TEE. Nobody else knows about it except the cloud. So you basically have it signed locally. You send it to the cloud. The cloud can unwrap it, look at it, say, hey, yeah, that's 10. That's exactly what I was expecting. And so any man in the middle couldn't actually change that value and get a valid result.
Right, right. I was just thinking the phrase on chip is a little vague at this point. Like if you're going out, if you're taking
this
information.
That's not really common. Like most of the stuff we have is not on chip, right? So we're doing it in software, not on chip with our current hardware.
So we don't have an on chip sensor right now. It's actually basically a camera.
Yeah.
So the ones that would be on chip, what would happen there is you would have that executing in a trusted execution environment. Yep. Basically the path, the actual SPI bus, if you will actually talk to the chip itself and get that data. And the idea is that path is heavily protected, right? It's locked down so nobody else can use it.
Yeah.
So there would be a piece of software that does all these transactions to make it look the same.
Okay. All right. So we took a couple of steps back. Let's go to the side now.
Okay.
What's tricky about fingerprints? About actually verifying that they're working? So,
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Well, I heard a story about a chicken.
Oh, you had to bring that up. For those of you out there, you may not know, you probably don't know, but yeah, there's this day that, so we actually want to do some benchmarking on fingerprint. So that involves, normally, if you're not Google, that involves tapping a sensor and recording with a high-speed camera. But here, Google, we solve the really hard problems. So we have a robot in the lab that we set up. And so anyway, one day I walked in and I find our PM working on, sitting at her desk with two delicious looking pieces of chicken and a very greasy phone. anyway, so they had used that to just basically test how fast the sensor was.
Okay. Eating chicken wings.
While eating chicken wings. Yes. So, they were really good, but anyway, so yeah, that was a way to test the entire path from touching the sensor to actually seeing the screen turn on.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know that I used to have problems more, I think, with older hardware than now, where the environment was kind of humid. Like, you know, if it's raining and drizzling, you know, all of a sudden I can't really use the screen very effectively. Are there challenges like that for fingerprints as well?
We have them. I personally have not seen that issue, and even the chicken wing thing didn't reveal it. So I think they're fairly robust against that.
I would check with like teenagers on dates. I think that would be a good
yeah,
test case.
Fair. Yeah, that's probably fair. I've heard of people having issues like if they're really sweaty at the time.
Yeah.
And we've been told by the sensor manufacturer that your actual registration, your enrollment of the finger is very dependent on that. Right? You can imagine if you have very sweaty, moist fingers, then you're not going to get a high contrast in the actual image because there's nothing to look at but water.
So, yeah, the authenticator could tell that you were moist.
Right. I didn't want to go there, but yes.
Actually, we have a binary signal right now. Maybe we should add a little bit more information.
So it can return that the sensor is wet or dirty. So they do have that option if the vendor so chooses.
So I wonder, maybe we don't know because this technology is relatively new, at least on these devices. But over time, you know, your camera lens may get scratched. I would assume that the sensor could also get scratched and sort of make this trickier, right? If you're really banging your phone around.
Yeah, I mean, just like any other piece of glass, I guess these are basically silicon-based devices. So if you crack your screen, you could also crack the sensor. And if that happens, basically, that's one of the reasons why we force you to have a backup, like your PIN pattern or password.
Or we could provide information maybe about
people
that.
People might like lose a finger. Your explanation
is
much better.
Yeah.
There's that. You could slice your finger in exactly the same pattern that your phone was cracked, and that might be sort of a cheaper.
I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, I suppose that would work.
Match that hairline.
Yeah. I mean, that is, you know, if you slam your finger in the door or do something like cut your finger, then yeah, that could mean that finger doesn't work anymore on the sensor, at least in the short term. But you now have a new feature for this fingerprint sensor to recognize.
Yeah, and in fact, maybe moist is not enough. We could have sweaty, bloody.
You know? Bloody. Well, I think we'll need a new sensor for that, but sure, okay. Why not?
Well, you know, we're always looking for new things to work on. So.
Are there any things that you want app developers to do with this?
As far as what? You mean just...
Well, if I'm thinking for people who are doing... in-app purchases would just be going through Play. So maybe those APIs are already, you know, handled. I'm more thinking that a lot of our listeners are app developers. I'm wondering if they're thinking, ooh, fingerprints, that's kind of cool.
Well,
but I'm wondering if there's use cases you've thought of where, oh, it'd be really great if everyone who does a to-do list, you know, and they want to have like password-protected notes or whatever, if they would just call this little API, then suddenly they can put their, you know, children's social security number in a note without worrying about it, for example.
Yeah, those are cases. I would caution developers on overuse. You don't want to, like, every time you enter your app, have you use your fingerprint just because.
Yeah, and the people who don't have fingerprint sensors might be very sad if you tie it to fingerprints.
You want it to be more of a low-touch technology then?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So anytime you're protecting something that is sensitive, it's a good idea to use fingerprint. We recommend it let's say you had an app that protected your passwords, for example.
Yeah.
That would be a good use of it. We would also like you to have some kind of backup because if somebody did compromise your device and this was not encrypted, then they would probably have access to your database.
Mm-hmm.
So what that gets to the other point, which is like if you use fingerprint and you're trying to protect a secret, please use crypto, which is part of the fingerprint API.
Okay.
Actually, I just thought of a fun app game they could create around fingerprints. It seems like you could access the information in like the FBI database, and the game could be basically, am I on the most wanted list? I like the nature of the game because in winning you lose.
Yeah, right? Pretty much.
So you're really conflicted.
I'm in.
Do I want to win?
Oh man.
High score. Again, new technologies to work on.
Yes.
That's what we do.
Yes.
Speaking of technologies.
Yeah.
I know you worked on Android for a long time. What are some of the things that you've been involved with? Like, didn't you work on the lock screen?
Yeah. So, and I also worked on Setup Wizard.
Actually, I think we can thank you for one of my favorite new features in M. And it's actually not the fingerprint. It's it's basically the key guard command to unlock the screen if there isn't an actual lock password required. Because we're now using that in Android Studio to when you run an app and it starts the emulator, we also unlock the emulator so that your app shows. Because it was so annoying before for multiple reasons. Not only is it an extra click, but in the emulator, you have to drag this thing really far. And that was just the worst.
Yeah, I didn't actually add that feature, but I know the guy did.
I thought it was you, and so I take back my credit.
I think I reviewed the change list, but yeah.
That's good enough.
All right, so whoever you were, thank you.
Okay, but prior to I assume that fingerprint kind of soaked you for the whole release, right?
Yeah, it actually had. There's a lot more details in fingerprint than it looks like at the surface. On the surface, there are basically three methods to call.
Right.
Which, well, actually, the rest of the time I was sleeping. So.
So that's like one method per quarter.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, I look for more job opportunities like this. the large part of it was just getting all basically. I've never worked in so many layers. This is going all the way basically down from the kernel all the way up to, you know, framework and even system APIs. So it had to work with KeyGuard. It had to work with, you know, applications. It had to – there were all these moving parts.
Security side. So
yes.
Yeah. I mean just the cryptography stuff that you had to tie into, right?
Yes. And we actually have a very good cryptography group that I mostly rely on for that kind of stuff. Turns out you need a lot of smart people to make all this stuff work.
And then whenever you ask them a question, like they won't give you an answer. Like they're that good at their job.
Right. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
Just don't give any.
Yeah, I'm good at giving them a blank stare when they explain how some of the crypto stuff works.
So in previous releases, I should point out to people that don't know you on the inside of Android, you're kind of one of those people that is famous for getting really large features to do at the very last minute of the release.
Yeah, that seems to happen. I thought it was me just choosing those great projects. But they don't look so bad when I choose them, but then they kind of choose me, I think.
Yeah. I think for many years it was because basically you were the lock screen guy.
Yeah.
And when there would be a new feature for that area, you were the obvious person to ask. And then for several releases running, there were new things coming along, be it Face Unlock. I assume you got involved to some extent there just in integrating into lock screen, not the underlying technology. Widgets on lock screen.
Yep.
I don't know how much you got involved in the notifications on lock screen
stuff. I was also involved in that, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that we had many, many people working on this in the end. It just it started off with me doing the work of about three people, and then it turned into requiring about 12 people. It's, well, to be fair, I mean, that the key guard is the place that people – that we like to differentiate our project, our products.
It's the first thing you see when you turn on your phone.
Right. As I like to say, it's the most common app on Android because it's the one you always look at and never pay much respect to.
I think which release was it when the widgets came along? Because I remember that there was a lot of churn. I remember every build was different.
I think that was Jelly Bean, actually.
Yeah,
Jelly
that's
Bean
the one where you had multiple, like you could swipe between the different lock screens with the widgets.
Right,
there was a brand new, the volume controls, I think, was when we finally got that working really well on the lock screen.
Right, yeah.
Which is super important for my use case, which is I like to listen to podcasts, you know, while I walk or run or whatever, and I like to have skip buttons. Yeah. Not for this podcast, mind you. There's nothing skippable here, but other podcasts.
Yeah.
You know.
It's good to have a rewind button.
Oh, rewind, yes. One. That's the one I use, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so we just were with that kind of that thing they built before we knew what we wanted. So it kind of evolved into what is now the notification screen. We wanted apps to be able to participate in that. Mm-hmm. But security-wise, that's a nightmare because you don't want these, you know, apps I mean, most apps are pretty good, but some apps are just, they don't know what they're doing, and they tend to open Pandora's box and cause all kinds of problems. So a lot of that was just basically compartmentalizing and figuring out how to make that work without causing a disaster.
Yeah, I actually have discovered in M, there's a new, I guess, ambient mode thing where by just picking up the phone, the screen comes alive.
Right.
And of course, so, you know, when I'm running, it's constantly doing that, and the buttons become pressable, the play pause. So I was wondering why when I'm jogging is it's constantly turning off the thing I'm listening to. And I finally realized, oh, it's the two features working together. The fact that it's being picked up, and then of course then it's so easy for anything in the, you know, the armband thingy to accidentally touch the buttons. So I actually
that sounds like a bug. Please file that.
Well, I don't
that
really
is, that is not intended.
But
behavior.
I don't really see how you could solve it other than like, oh, if it's ambient mode picked up, the volume controls probably shouldn't be.
It's a tough challenge. Yeah. There are various things we have tried there. There's much more to be done there. The actual pickup, the device pickup, is detected by using accelerometers and gyros.
Yeah.
By a DSP that's not provided by us. So there are various pieces of code that need to run in order to facilitate that. Mm-hmm. And my guess is the particular device you have is just overly sensitive. So we should look at that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely moving.
Yeah, well, it is moving.
Yes.
But it seems like they could pick up like, well, it's a cyclic moving. So
yeah, and there
we
is
don't
a,
need to turn it on again.
And there is an exercise app running. GPS is going. You know?
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of stuff going. Yeah. I mean, depending on how the thing's oriented, it should actually look at the proximity sensor before waking the device. Yeah. And so if it is in your pocket, for example, it shouldn't come on.
Yeah, no, that'd
be
good.
If you have it facing out and there's nothing for it to look at, it will probably come on and stay on.
This is the real reason Chet and I do this podcast, is so that we can sort of corner people in public.
Yeah,
and then get our
that.
Favorite bugs fixed.
So when are you going to have that fixed? Let me write this down.
When you after you file the bug.
All right.
That was Keygarden.
Anything else you worked on? It's Setup Wizard.
Setup Wizard,
this is going back a while.
This
right?
is going
like,
way back.
Setup Wizard is now, like, there's a separate team working on that. It's changed a lot.
Yeah. So way back when, when I first joined Google, it's like, hey, what is Jim going to work on? Let's have him work on some performance tools. Hey, you know that thing where you turn the phone on and it just, you start, like, programming it and stuff, and then you finally get it working? Maybe we should make that easier for an end user. Like, you don't just, like, put your phone on ADB and then poke an account into it. You actually had to, like, walk the user through adding a Gmail or email account of some sort.
So when was this pre-1.0?
That was, like, for the G1, the first release.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So Setup Wizard is the add an account. What Wi-Fi do you want to connect to? Like, did it have all of those elements at that time?
At that time, it didn't have all that stuff. It was basically the out-of-box experience. How do you get into a runnable state? think – I don't think Wi-Fi was in the original setup. I think that was like a thing you had to tap on after you – I don't know where that fit in. It's a phone, not a computer. Yeah. Yeah, we must have – I guess there was something in there, like you said, Wi-Fi. Or we assumed that you just had connectivity because you were – it was a phone with data.
Yeah.
But somehow we got that all working.
I actually used to use the Setup Wizard code a lot for demos in the tools because it was one of those apps that had lots of really visual layouts.
Okay.
So it was perfect for showing the layout editor, like, you know, with the – I remember when the –
I take that as a compliment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was. It was because, you know, a lot of apps you just find very, like, isolated layouts to do almost nothing. They're composed with other layouts. Yeah. But here you found this, like, hey, do you agree to this these permission requirements? And it has, like, long – and they were all internationalized for 20 languages. So it was, it was kind of a great sample.
I used to – it was interesting because, you know, people would bring out new types of layouts back in the day and it'd be like, hey, use our new grid layout. And I'd be like, gee, that sounds like fun. And then I'd use it. I'd find out, like, I'm the only person on Android using it. So I'd, like, post it, like, hey, does anybody know how to get grid layout to do this thing? And, like, just
– grid layout? Do you mean nested linear layouts?
Yeah, exactly.
actually, since you brought up permissions, I meant to ask about this.
Oh.
So I was reading some docs on Fingerprint earlier today. For an unrelated reason, and it said, stick the following permission in your manifest. And I thought, well, we just talked to Ben to be self-referential. We we had on Ben Poise to talk about runtime permissions a few weeks ago. So why, like, permission in the manifest versus runtime permission? Like, what's the what are the permissions required for Fingerprint? Why are they
– So there's – so if you're an app, there's exactly one permission. That's use Fingerprint. And that's just there. I mean, originally we were making it a dangerous permission. So basically the user, I mean, this is pre the new stuff.
Yeah.
And then, so that's basically so we know the apps that are actually using Fingerprint. So we can actually flag them or do whatever. If we make a change, we can notify those developers that, hey, you know, this thing is either wrong in your app or this is the proper way to do it. So it's mainly there for us to find out those apps that use it.
Okay.
But it's not a dangerous permission now.
Right.
So there's no having to agree to it. Like, you either put your finger on that sensor or not.
Yeah. So when the app gets installed, they still have, there's an API they have to request permission, but we just grant it.
Okay.
It's also a way for us to audit. So if you wanted to go see, hey, what are all the apps that are currently using Fingerprint, we could actually give you that list.
Okay. And since it's not dangerous, users couldn't go and turn it off because only dangerous permissions are the ones that are surfaced.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right. That was a little backtrack. Sorry. I just meant ask about that.
Yeah.
Anything else?
That's all.
Been really been on Android for a while.
I think I'll just go work on a few more things.
Okay. So we'll come to you at the end of the next release and ask you to do some huge
feature. Yeah, I'm hoping to add three more APIs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, for me, definitely Fingerprint's a big highlight of you know, my new device, NM for that matter.
Yeah.
I like permissions too.
It's been a fun adventure.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's a – I mean, it's a nice technology. It's certainly a nice use case for, you know, faster interactivity with the phone. I think when Face Unlock came out, it was a really cool thing.
Right.
But it was more of a novelty. Like, it wasn't clear how it was going to integrate with, you know, normal usage. This one feels pretty natural.
Actually, if you use Face Lock now, it goes through the Trust Agent, so it goes through Smart Lock, which means that it used to show you your face, which is kind of awkward, just because, like, oh, I didn't really want to see that.
I used it as a makeup mirror.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, but that feature's gone now. But now it looks for you kind of ambiently. So when you enable it, then the device will actually come up and just unlock magically, and you're like, didn't I have to unlock? And then you remember you have Face Unlock turned on.
Cool. Well, anything else before we close out?
I think that's it.
All right. Thanks.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.